Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. The prolific singer, songwriter, and producer Rafael Sadiq first came to prominence in the 90s as part of the multi-platinum group Tony, Tony, Tony. Here's my favorite. It feels good. Yeah. It feels good. Oh, it feels good. Sadiq then pursued a solo career as well as producing for and collaborating with just about everybody. The Roots, John Legend, Elton John, D'Angelo, Whitney Houston, just to name a few. His work as executive producer on Solange's album, A Seat at the Table, earned him his third Grammy win out of nearly 20 nominations throughout his career. And last year, he was nominated for an Academy Award for his work with Mary J. Blige on the Mudbound film soundtrack. Here's the song, Mighty River.
Oh, river, let it wash me.
His forthcoming album, Jimmy Lee, is his first in 8 years. Inspired by his brother, it focuses on themes of addiction, vulnerability, and growing up. Here's a clip from the lead single, Something Keeps Calling.
Something keeps calling.
Jimmy Lee comes out August 23rd, and Rafael Sadiq is here today. Thanks for stopping by the studio.
Thanks for having me.
So your first album in 8 years, what made you decide, yeah, now is the time?
Well, it just had to be a product that I wanted to release. And, you know, like you said, I've been working with a lot of different people, you know, scoring film here, TV shows here, and I got tired of listening to it being unfinished also. And then then also Columbia got some cooler people working at the label that I was into. And, you know, had a team. I guess it's the perfect storm, I like to call it. Mm-hmm. Things lined up and it was just time to finish it and put it out.
So the material had been with you, mm-hmm. and you'd been living with it and working on it.
Correct.
What was keeping you from finishing it?
Solange album was one, Insecure was two, just all the scoring and also a little bit, you know, just I'm a lazy singer. To be honest, I'm sort of I love to play music, but finishing a song singing is just, it's different.
That is just so funny because we just listed about the 900 things that you've done. And then you're like, yeah, the last thing, the singing thing.
Yeah, the singing thing sometimes is a little much, you know. You got to go in there. Because I'm going to make it right once I sing. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's so I have to go to a different place in my mind. And that it takes a lot of energy to do that. So I was okay, I need to go ahead and stamp this record. And that's what made me finish it.
And you mentioned there were some new folks at the record label. What were they doing that you needed to help you finish this? What was that relationship that you needed?
Yeah, Felicia and Tubby, Sean Holiday. They're just, I've known them in their other professions. Felicia was a publicist. She worked for Prince. She was really promoting Prince heavily, you know, some of the last part of his career. And Tubby was always in something for years. I would see him working with different people, bringing people together, and producers, management. And so then when you get this energy in a label, plus I had, you know, Rob Stringer was still there. Mm-hmm. they hired, you know, a new president. And I just felt like it was some new energy there. And I knew they was just trying to put it together. Mm-hmm. And I felt like they had a good enough team to see if they what they wanted to do with the record. And I was talking to them, and I just felt like I had a good enough team to actually add on to what I've been doing. Because right now, when you make so many records for so long, you just want to add on to your life, to, you know, mm-hmm. to the music that you've been making, because nothing is going to be new, you know. And it's hard to make new records that people actually want to hear. after you made so many. So my goal is always to make new fans and older fans really like three or four new songs.
Yeah. It's interesting. Have you been in a situation, and you don't have to name names, where you released something and the team wasn't right? And what does that feel like? What does that look like?
Yeah. You don't have any cheerleaders. You don't have a team. It's just bad. They don't get you. They don't understand black music. They don't even understand pop music. Mm-hmm. You know, Ron Perry came on as a president. You know, he's a musician, and you know, Rob Stringer really believed in him, and for him to grab Felicia and Sean, I just felt like this is a team that I could walk out there with.
That's so interesting. So the president's a musician. It's somebody who, he's not like a, he's a business type, but he's also a musician, so he understands musicians.
Yeah, he's a guitar player. He loves rock. He's a rock dude. But you know, I'm pretty much all of those dudes, you know, from, you know, blues, rock, jazz, and everything. So, you know, he's not Teddy Riley or somebody, the president. He's a rock dude, mm-hmm. but I feel like he could get what I'm doing. And if somebody explained it to him even more, he can get it more. And Rob Stringer understands me more than anybody. And so, but if he had those, you know, other people like Felicia and Sean, I feel like that's a great, you know, great coach. I see Stringer as like the GM, mm-hmm. and, you know, see, you know, Ron is like sort of like a coach. And I see like the other two, Felicia and Sean, almost like, you know, like Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, you know. So I got a good team. With me being the point guard, mm-hmm. I'm dishing the ball to them. It's the album. I'm giving you the ball, but now I need you guys to shoot it and make it happen. And that's why I'm in New York right now talking to you, because they understand how important this is.
My guest is Rafael Saadiq. We're going to talk about his new album, forthcoming. It's called Jimmy Lee. It's going to be due out this August. So Jimmy Lee, what's your brother? You come from a big family. Can you explain to our listeners why you dedicated this album and named it for him?
It's really not a dedication to Jimmy. It's just that I feel like everybody, you know, men are people don't talk about when they have someone in their family that has, you know, addiction, and we don't have therapy or anything like that. And it was sort of therapy for me. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everyone has a Jimmy in their life. So I wanted to tell these stories to people who can listen through composition and through feel and through soul and through, you know, every it's a world epidemic. And I say it in one mm-hmm. of my songs, and we're all in it together. And I wanted to speak to it because I didn't want to look down on people with addiction. I think we all have addiction. I'm sure my addiction is, you know, it sounds funny, but it's real. Sometimes it's hard for me not to eat chocolate croissants in the morning, you know, and I'm trying very hard not to do it. And I actually really thought about my brother. I said, wow, I can't even stop this. And then I'm asking someone like him to stop when he started using heroin. And that's a chemical. I'm sure he didn't know what he was doing by touching it. And that just dawned on me that I should, you know, sort of talk about this and you know, things people go through all the time without knowing, or people look down on people with a drug addiction. I have a lot of friends who have some type of addiction, pills or whatever. And I've just been around this so much that it just cluttered my head. And when I start writing music, whatever's in my head at that time usually ends up being the album.
It's interesting today you were the third person to talk about addiction. Three very different people. Bryan Stevenson, who wrote Just Mercy.
Right.
Judy Collins.
Right.
And you, just in the past hour, this issue has come up again and again and again. It's interesting.
Yes, I think it's that time where people are just, you know, you can't look down on it. It's just, it happens. You know, one brother died of a heroin overdose. My other brother, who was doing drugs and couldn't kick it, he decided to take my dad's shotgun and kill himself. My other brother was shot over like 12 grand when I was 7, you know, over having drugs and somebody wanted the cash. So it's all drug related, you know, and you never know. It's the corporate men. It's the functioning drug addict is probably walking through this office right now. I'm sure it's 10 of us walking through here just have some type of addiction or mm-hmm. some type of being, you know, alcoholism or whatever it is, you know.
Food, it can be anything.
Food, yeah.
Shopping?
Shopping is mine, definitely. I definitely have a shopping problem. I try walking these stores sometimes. I walk in and say, I'm not buying anything. walk out $5,000 later.
You bought everything. On this record, and correct me if I'm wrong, you executive produced the record.
Yes, I did, yeah.
So executive producers' jobs, from what I understand, in the music business, is you have to get the best out of your talent. Like, it's to uplift your talent and find their best thing. So tell me, as a executive producer, what did you need to get out of Sadiq? What did you need to get out of you as a performer? And you may talk about yourself in the third person.
Okay, great, fine. Listen, one of my friends, Brian Grant, he does all the time. You know, B. Grant. So yeah, myself, when Raphael's doing a record, he's always trying to impress people before him. Not now. It's people like Maurice White, or the Al Greens of the world, or Tower Power, Lenny Williams, Lenny White, or just, you know, Delphonics, or it could be like the Mamas and the Papas, or it could be Elton John, people that I work with, that I want them to hear it, and they can say, we know where he's pulling from. This is great. We haven't heard this before. This is wow, how he put this in a capsule and made this now. Like, how does he do that? Nobody's thinking like that. But it's also an impactful record that can also play on radio. It can also be licensed for many films. So I like to play in all those arenas. So as an executive producer, I always like to put my best foot forward and not just play with people and give somebody, also kids, I love to give kids the opportunity to be musicians. And like I did, you know, when we watch cartoons, you watch Bugs Bunny and you watch these Warner Brothers film and this Disney stuff, it was huge orchestras and symphonies in this music. And you watch Taxi, these TV shows with these great intros like Good Times, like Bob James and Donny Hathaway singing Maude. It was all these different music, like, jumps that can jump a kid into music. So I wanted to give music also back to the culture, to kids, and say, you know what, whatever that is, I want to do that, and I want to be a part of music.
When you think about putting together an album at this point, are you in the camp of it's the work in its entirety, or do you take each song to be its own thing and the listener just has to go from thing to thing to thing? Or is it like, are you into the whole concept thing, what album from beginning to end?
Well, that's a weird question for me, because yes, like my 60s record, the way I see it, was definitely a concept record.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see Jimmy Lee as a concept record, but in the end, it ended up being a concept record. I didn't try to, because the reason why I say it's a concept record now, because once the record starts, it doesn't stop to the very end. And when people ask me about every song, I can honestly tell them that every song is about the same thing a little bit. So it ended up being a concept album without me actually trying, even though the subject matters differ. Like, one is when I'm singing This World Is Drunk and the people are mad, or I'm singing Sinner's Prayer, I'm reaching out saying, you know, people pray to be better, but then some people find drugs to make them better. So it ended up being a concept record without me even trying.
So organically, it just happened.
Organically, it happened, correct.
My guest is Raphael Sadiq. He's got a new record coming out in August called Jimmy Lee. You talked about this album being, quote, growing up and acknowledging your frailties. Was that, I mean, that's being vulnerable publicly.
Yes, yeah.
What made you decide you could do that? What was going on?
I guess it was the thing that was next for me is just being very honest with myself. You know, it's the most beautiful thing to be honest with yourself. You don't have nothing to hide. You have more to talk about, you know, with people like yourself. And it's just that time in my life where I'm talking about it. I've been in, you know, relationships, out of them, been in bands, been out of them, you know, I've done records, been with management companies that were good, some were bad. And so they had to hear it. Everybody's going to know what I'm talking about that knows me.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, everybody's going to know what I'm talking about, who I'm talking about, and then the people that don't know me at all is going to have the same experience that I had. I feel like when this record comes out, you'll be able to tell me more about my own record than I told you about it.
Who did you collaborate with on this?
I didn't really collab with anybody, really, except... Not people, anybody people would know. Like, I guess I didn't. Charlie Burrell on my walk. He's a guitar player and he's an artist. Brooke DeLu. He did a couple songs with me, which would be So Ready, I'm Feeling Love, and Rikers Island. And Kendrick lend me a few bars, Kendrick Lamar, on a song called Rear View. And Daniel Watts. Daniel Watts is an artist himself. He's also a tap dancer. He also played in, he's a Broadway actor. He was in Hamilton. He was also in the Nat King Cole play that was very beautiful, written. He played Sammy Davis. He did the Redux poetry piece that's on the record. It's very, very, very powerful. I feel like everyone on this album played a part, just fit. It fit right in with, you know, where I'm going.
We're in New York. Tell me about the track Rikers Island.
Yeah, Rikers Island is... my brother Jimmy spent a lot of time in prison. And so when, as a kid, when I would go to Santa Rita prison to see him, you know, kids used to sort of glorify prison. When you come home, maybe like, my brother's in prison, my brother's locked up. And I remember going to visit my brother, and maybe the second time I told him, so you ready to go? Let's go. Just go home. And he's like, I can't go, I'm locked up. Then that's when I realized that he wasn't a celebrity, he was in prison. So, and I've always heard about Rikers and San Quentin, because recording at the studio in Sausalito, you drive past San Quentin. So it would have been more, a little different if I would have called it San Quentin, but Rikers just had a better ring to it, and I know about Rikers. Being very blunt, that's what the record, too many in Rikers Island. And I felt like there's no prison reform to educate, to teach people before they get to that level. And I felt like, you know, by me singing about Rikers Island, maybe it brings some awareness. It's a lot of awareness out there now with Ava DuVernay show and Jay-Z, everybody's talking about it. But it's just something that I thought about when I go to see my brother. The prison would be packed, and I could look in the parking lot and see all these old cars where the parents are, and then I would see the district attorneys in these BMWs and nice cars, and I could see very well how the prison system was making money off of the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I decided to write Rikers Island.
And you have a real personal connection with it.
I do, mean, very personal.
And, you know, that's, I mean, those songs that have that personal connection, I just truly believe, even if they aren't hit songs, for the people who are having that same experience, they're incredibly meaningful.
Correct.
I really think they are. My guest is Rafael Saadiq. You know what? You scored Boys in the Hood? Worked on the Boys in the Hood soundtrack?
I did work on Boys in the Hood.
And you scored for Insecure on HBO. How did that come about?
Well, I can really credit John Singleton, the late John. John came to me and said, I think you could score a film. And at the time, I think Stanley Clark was scoring all his films. He asked me to write a song for Boys in the Hood, and that was Just Me and You. Then he came back to me for Poetic Justice and asked me would I do a song for Poetic Justice, which was Ask of You, which is one of my bigger solo songs that everybody loves. And from there, I did Seat at the Table, and Melina asked me would I be in the scoring Insecure, and I said yes, and from there I just sort of kind of kept going, even though it was always in my trajectory to do that. It's Insecure is one of my funner projects to work on, because Issa Rae is in, and the cast is hilarious.
She seems like she's just knows what she wants.
She knows she's a boss for sure.
Are you gonna tour?
Yes, I'm definitely gonna tour. I have some dates. I couldn't tell you what the dates are, but a lot of them coming up. And every time somebody go tour, I almost get a little nervous because I'm not ready yet with the band and everything. But I'm working it out in my mind.
You've done so much, so many different things. Is there something you still want to do? You had mentioned like you're kind of at that point in your life when you've done a lot of stuff. What's something you just really want to do? Lucrative or not?
Yeah, I just want to just. I just want to build homes. I want to do design, architect. Yeah, I love that.
Really? Where's that from?
Just some remodeling my own homes and studios and looking at, you know, just always looking at, you know, growing up in Oakland, looking at old Tudor houses and driving through Berkeley, looking at all these old homes. I've always had an eye for it.
Have you seen that movie, The Black Last Black Man in San Francisco?
Of course. Is that beautiful, right? That's what I grew up looking at. That's exactly where I grew up, looking at those places.
Well, I wish you luck.
Yeah, thank you.
My guest has been Rafael Siddiq. The name of his album, forthcoming album, is Jimmy Lee. Thank you so much for coming by the studios.
Thank you, too.
You've been listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. I will meet you back here next time. Thanks for listening.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.